From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of May, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting channels seeds in Windsor, Illinois, will join us to check things down on the farm and the situation in the cash grain markets. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. To that with Mike Tenurum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, I'll update you on what's been happening in the world of agricultural trade, ag news, and the Farm Bill. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, thanks for being with us, Dan. How's the weather where you are today?
We're warm. Of course, it's supposed to be warm down here in Waco this time of year, but we're probably warmer a couple weeks earlier. Mid-90s is kind of the norm once you get into June, mid-90s to upper 90s, but it seems like the mid to upper 90s are starting a couple weeks earlier this year than what we normally do. So we're plenty.
I know Texas is one big state, but you're there and I'm not. I read today from the beef producers that they were awfully concerned in saying that this one, as far as droughts go, could be worse than the last one. And I think they were actually talking about 2010 and not 2012.
Well, yeah, we had dry weather back in 10 and 12, 10 and 11. That was the year we lost a lot of pin oak trees. That's kind of a tree, state tree that we have down here in Texas. And it was so dry that we lost a lot of those old oak trees because it was so dry. But where we're at, we're not necessarily in the drought. We're further enough south that we've had some pretty good rains. But once you get up into the panhandle, where the larger portion of the agricultural world in Texas is, you can get into some dry areas, just like the Southwest and Kansas and whatnot.
Tell me about your reading of what's been happening in Chicago at the marketplace.
Well, let's start off technically with corn. Today we did have a reversal down. We did make new highs for the season here, or for the calendar year. And then we reversed and closed lower. Some in the technical world may take a look at the December 18 corn futures. If you put it up on a weekly chart, we basically went up and came within a quarter of a cent, or pretty close in a way to the high that we had a year ago, I think last June, when corn made its high. So some in the technical world, looking at a weekly chart, could call that maybe a big double top formation. The key, I think, for the week, though, corn is still higher. And the key will be to see if we have any downside follow through on today's reversals and whether or not we close out the week lower with a down to the downside. My guess today, kind of tells me the market was buying corn. A sneaky feeling there was some old crop movement probably from out west. There probably was some new crop pricing probably in the eastern corn belt with prices higher overnight. So that's what it looks like to me. So I'll be interesting to see whether or not if the market does have some follow through to the downside on today's reversal and what magnitude that is. But it's definitely a warning signal that you don't want to get too bullish or too stubborn, at least at this point. The corn market has done probably more than what a lot of people had figured it would do 2-3 months ago. And we are, up into that $4 cash delivery, depending upon which location you're at. So corn, something to watch, see whether or not this reversal down holds and whether it's validated with a lower weekly close. Soybeans, November soybeans, you could almost call it a quad top. We've been up into this, 1055, 1060 area. This is the fourth time we've been up there. And if you look, stand back at it, you can kind of almost think that we're kind of in a 60-cent trading range between this 1060 down to the $10 area. Now, that's, that makes a lot of difference per acre, I suppose. 50 bushel beans, that's $25 per acre. But we're basically a quad top. Some people might want to call it a double top. If you look at it on a weekly chart, you might be able to put a little different twist to it. But beans only closed a couple cents lower, but they did have a reversal down. So that will be another thing that technicians will be watching to see whether or not we have follow through and whether or not that follow through is enough to post out the week with a lower close or a weekly reversal to the downside. So that will be something that technicians will be watching. And that's about all I can really say about those. Both markets are overbought on some of the indicators. Does suggest that the market is ripe for at least a period of consolidation or some kind of corrective decline. But I got other indicators would suggest that that the overall underlying trend is still fairly solid to the upside. But anytime you have reversal downs on a daily basis, you definitely have to pay attention.
Now, so as we look forward, are there any fundamentals in the marketplace, do you think, that would be either supportive or put pressure on the market in the months of June and July? Weather, of course, is one of them. I don't know that good weather would put that much pressure on. Maybe it would. But bad weather, of course, could push things to the other side. What about world trade, other items that we might not be thinking about at this time?
Well, I think world trade, we're in pretty solid footing. I think soybeans are probably in better footing than maybe corn might be. And I know that seems to be, that's probably opposite of what the majority of the people think. But I think world trade, I've always been a big advocate that before this China deal was over with, that China would end up buying more soybeans from us. And I think that's going to come to fruition. So I think demand for beans are going to be a lot stronger than probably what a lot of people think. The farmer is more of a big cash short in the beans. He probably doesn't own very many old crop beans. Very many of them are up into that 50-60% priced on $10. So there's not going to be much hedge pressure to come into the bean market if it decides to take off. So I think world trade wise, I think China demand is going to surprise everybody, and beans have a better shot at higher levels. Corn does have a tight balance sheet. The question is what's going to be the June 30th report? Anytime you get to a June quarterly report and an acre report, I just run for the hills because there's always a surprise somewhere. And I would say, that is going to be the next pivot point. I think, from here on out, we're going to start trading crop rating levels, and then we're going to try to take a guess how much acreage was lost or was gained due to the growing season. But the June stocks and acreage report's going to be the one that could bring somebody to their knees pretty quickly. If we find more acres or if we have less acres and surprises everybody. But the audience has heard me say very many times, June is a big month for December corn and November soybeans to make season highs. So I think it's time now. I mean, we're only a week away from June that you need to kind of pay real close attention to the market, kind of decide on what you want to do. I would probably suggest spacing out some selling in here just to capitalize on the seasonal odds that you make June highs, and kind of keep your marketing, tucked in, but I want to get terribly bearish because I do think things are better longer term, but you still have to, once if we get a good Corn Belt rain across the Midwest, the crops crops made, we'll argue about how big it is for the next 3 months until the combines roll.
All right. Hey, we'll keep track of it. And thanks for the good advice. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start overseas in Argentina, where they may halt the incremental lowering of the soybean export taxes as part of the government's renewed deficit-cutting effort there, that according to a spokesperson for the agriculture ministry. The tax started the year at 30%, we already knew that, and was to be reduced by half a percentage point every month for 2 years. Farmers in the United States were counting on this lowering to help keep soybeans off the market, as Argentine farmers would see an appreciation or an increase by half a percentage point in the price of their soybeans every month through 2019. The levy, by the way, currently stands at 27.5%. Well, let's stay with soybeans. U.S. trade negotiators will have a list of specific U.S. farm products that China needs to buy more of in the very near future. Gary Crawford from the United States Department of Agriculture has more with Secretary Sonny Perdue.
When Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross flies to China for the next phase of trade negotiations, he'll be traveling with a group of Agriculture Department technical experts, and he will carry a list of U.S. farm commodities.
Specifically on the commodities that we believe we could expand our exports to China with.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue telling reporters in Washington Wednesday President Trump had asked for that list, his goal to sell $25 billion more ag products to China.
We didn't quite get that accumulating what we think we can do right now, but we think we can grow into that amount. We are probably going to be in about half that area right now as we take to China and to start working out the details of that.
But Purdue said the discussions will go beyond just purchases of products.
We're also looking at some of the policies and the protocols that restrict U.S. products from going into China. That will be part of the technical discussions as well.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
On that technical note, the United States is said to be seeking better access for imports of genetically modified crops into China. China does not permit planting of GMO food crops, but it does allow the import of GMO soybeans and corn for use in its huge animal feed industry. While the specific demands regarding U.S. biotech are not known, Washington has repeatedly cited the issue in trade talks with Beijing in recent years. Let's switch topics now to ethanol and the RFS. Marathon Petroleum Corporation, one of the largest refining companies in the nation, requested a hardship waiver from the EPA. Marathon wants one of its facilities exempted from its requirements under the Renewable Fuel Standard. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score was not pleased with the news. She says two of the largest corporations in the country are set to create an oil monopoly, and they're still expecting small refiner handouts. This is what happens when the EPA regulators are permitted to ignore the president's commitments to rural communities. It's not surprising that Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley weighed in on this topic, saying that an oil company making billions of dollars in profits thinks it's got a shot at receiving a hardship waiver shows how broken this process is. The smallest Marathon refiner produces 93,000 barrels of product a day at its Canton, Ohio location. And finally today, here's a story from Illinois, where lawmakers have approved some legislation, though it's not become law yet, that would allow farmers to grow industrial hemp. Jacqueline Driscoll has more from Springfield.
Hemp is derived from the cannabis plant, but it has a non-drug use. It can create biodegradable building materials, paper, textiles, and more. It's an idea that's been proposed for years at the State House, though previously it failed to gain enough support. Despite its little to no THC levels, the mind-altering component in cannabis, the stigma associated with marijuana was a hurdle. State Representative Tim Butler, a Republican from Springfield, says this legislation makes a clear distinction about the purpose of the crop.
This adds to the diversification for farmers. It allows them to do other things than just corn and beans, and to find another source of revenue to come in the door.
The measure has passed both chambers of the state's General Assembly. If the governor signs it, the Illinois Department of Agriculture has 120 days to set rules for the program. I'm Jacqueline Driscoll.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Well, the House of Representatives last week brought the Farm Bill up for a vote on Friday, and it did not pass. This in large part because the Democrats did not vote for the bill, and they were joined by members of the Freedom Caucus and members of a Main Street Caucus as well. The Freedom Caucus, highly conservative, and wants a vote on an immigration bill. Looks like they're going to get that. The Main Street Caucus, far more moderate, and Republican Rodney Davis from here in Illinois is a member, is looking to find a way to bring the farm bill forward. That vote may still yet come up, and the chairman of the Agriculture Committee from Texas, a Republican, Mike Conaway, says it will, but there won't be any changes to the bill at all.
No, because right now I can't change the bill. Motion to reconsider means you bring the exact same bill up, so I'm not negotiating with my Republican buddies, and I'm not negotiating with the Democrats. Haven't been negotiating with the Democrats since they walked away from the table and made it really difficult for me to negotiate. So right now the plan is to bring the exact same bill up that we voted on last Friday. It's all about immigration and the efforts that leadership are trying to go to get satisfy the group within the Republican conference and then get them to yes. Once that happens, once we get that immigration vote, then I'm going to ask leadership that the very next vote be HR2 so that there's no gap between the immigration and satisfying their demands on immigration that then they deliver their yes votes on the farm bill.
House leaders have set a June 22nd target date to re-vote the bill and are talking about votes on a series of immigration bills the same week. Rodney Davis from Illinois, a Republican, tells the Washington Post he hasn't seen an immigration bill yet that can magically bring everybody together.
Some of my colleagues that, are even on my side of the aisle, I frankly don't know what they want because it changes every week. And you can't negotiate with somebody who continues to move the goalposts. And in this debate, clearly the Republican leadership, before the farm bill was put on the floor, promised a vote on the bill that they wanted, that they know is not going to pass. And that still wasn't enough.
So dissensions remain among the Republicans, and it will require the majority of them to pass a farm bill without the aid of any Democrats. That is possible, and it wouldn't even take all of the Freedom Caucus members, but they'll have to be satisfied they've had their day on immigration. Well, let's check the cash grain situation now with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, so tell me about conditions on the farm today. I know if you go to the west, and you're just straight south of us here in Champaign, but if you go to the west, things get pretty dry, even a little further south from you, I suppose. But you tell me about conditions where you are.
Yeah, I think right in here where we're at, we certainly have the table set to have a whale of a crop if the weather would cooperate. I don't see many, if any, tiles running currently, so we're dry. We've missed several of these rains that have gone through last weekend. If you'd have looked at the radar, you'd have thought we were getting rain, but we didn't. And so for the most part, it's pretty darn dry. Guys are starting to get a little worried because once you miss a rain or two, sometimes it's hard to catch one. But by all means, the way things look currently, if we can get moisture, we're going to have a heck of a crop.
And at what stage are the corn and the soybeans? Are they about 4 inches for soybeans and or that big and what, 3 or 4 leaves for corn?
Yeah, we're probably V5, V6. A lot of folks in our area, the corn's grown a ton in the last week or so. Of course, this heat has certainly been good, but beans are, as you say, maybe 3 or 4 inches tall.
Let's take up the marketplace just a little bit, Matt. What'd you think of today? There was a reversal in the corn. How detrimental is this?
Yeah, I mean, we go up and we're pushing almost on 430. You know, we're making new highs for the move, and then we end up closing the market down about a nickel. We're certainly off of the highs a fair amount on these corn. It is a little concerning. I feel like corn will be supported currently unless we see some sort of a weather pattern shift, especially given the fact that some of the estimates of the Supreme crop in Brazil continue to get ratcheted down somewhat. So I'm not overly concerned. I do think these have offered really good opportunities to get, some incremental sales on the books at levels we did not expect to see.
Can you come up with another explanation besides the trade looking at what it hopes is a good crop based on the planting rate from Monday? Because you did mention Safrina. There is some dry conditions in parts of Iowa, parts of Missouri, along the Ohio River Valley. Fundamentally, it doesn't sound like we're off to a great start, but sure, some places sure look good.
Yeah, I mean, I think one big reason that you saw a little bit of a sell-off today is that we weren't able to push through that area. I thought 430 all along was going to be a point of resistance because you're getting close to $4 out of the field cash corn for a lot of folks, and you've seen a wall of sales on the waterfall. You know, in my opinion, I think going into the weekend, this market's been overbought for a while, and I do feel like going into a long weekend, there's a fair amount of profit being taken. Some of these folks have made a lot of money on this corn market of late, you know, and soybean market similarly.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. This is the closing market report for Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here now from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. It's rather hot, Mike. Across parts of the Corn Belt, it's been a little dry, too. The marketplace has been taking some notice. What's your current assessment?
Well, it has been dry for different areas of the central U.S., but not everyone is experiencing the same conditions. Our proprietary application shows that 40% of U.S. corn production was drier than normal over the last 30 days. So that is a significant number, but if you look at that number historically over the last six growing seasons, it's not all that unusual to see that level of dryness. It only becomes unusual if it lasts, and it has to last for a number of weeks. So here we are, we're looking at it being a little bit dry. We know that if we start to get some good rains, things will start to improve. And of course, Todd, that's the main uncertainty.
Where are the areas of concern?
Well, the most dry area, or at least the highest coverage of dryness, is generally along and to the south of Interstate 80. And then there's also some pockets of dryness from North Dakota into northern Minnesota. Now, you might recall that there's also been an area of flooding sandwiched right between there, and that basically extends from the Iowa-Minnesota border east through the Indiana-Ohio border. So in between these dry pockets, there's actually a wet area. Now, going forward, we do have a number of chances for rain across the northwest third of the central U.S. That does include some of those dry areas of North Dakota, Minnesota, even into South Dakota as well. So we think that conditions will start to improve next week from a soil moisture standpoint in the northern plains. Across the rest of the Corn Belt, where it's been a little bit dry, and then extending on to the south from there, we're going to watch a separate system. This one is a tricky one to forecast because it's completely separated from the jet stream. And when storm systems do that, they tend to wobble somewhat erratically, and that makes their path uncertain with time. We know the system is going to linger in the southeastern U.S. this weekend, and then it will make its move toward the Corn Belt once we get into next week. At this point, it looks like we're going to see some rain from that system in parts of the Delta and in parts of the Southern Corn Belt, basically in those areas nearest and to the south of the Ohio River Valley, and then extending to the south from there through Arkansas. So there is going to be some rain out there, Todd, but as far as a big soaker, we might have to wait a little bit longer for that, at least across the southeast half of the central U.S.
And at this time of year, we begin to think about evaporation rates. Will the very warm weather abate just a bit?
Well, it stays very warm here through the end of next week, so through about June 1st. Once we get into that first full week of June, that's where things do change a little bit. It is notable that it will turn and remain fairly hot across Texas and in those areas of the southern U.S. But at the same time, we're going to see a number of systems flow across the northern U.S. Now, we don't have a smoking gun here for heavy rainfall during that first week of June, but typically when this happens, you'll see these systems move across, develop some rain in different areas at different times, and also keep that heat on to the south. We think that's the most likely scenario. Any heat in the first week of June should stay to the south of the Corn Belt for the most part, while we see some areas of thunderstorms to the north of that. Remember, the key periods of development for corn and soybeans basically don't begin until the middle of June. So we're still before that period of time here when we're talking about weather. A lot of things can change, and we'll have to watch this weather, see how it unfolds, And then we can really start to focus on some of these different areas.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.